In the last few weeks, we've heard quite a bit of Tony Sarno's voice and music here at Cairns FM, a mixture of blues and rock. Tony Sarno is an electric guitarist, singer and songwriter. It seems that Tony was born to be wild, as he actually put together a band in fourth grade. His early influences were The Beatles, B.B. King, Muddy Waters and Sly and the Family Stone. He's played lead guitar with David Clayton Thomas, Blood, Sweat and Tears, and opened for B.B. King numerous times, as well as the late Stevie Ray Vaughan. A man of many talents who now lives in New Hampshire and northeast USA, I finally found the chance to catch up with Tony via telephone to find out more. Tony, I've skimmed over some of your background in our intro there, but if one delves deeply into your bio, you've certainly mixed with some of the greats and met some awesome musicians along the way. What was it about music that made up your mind at such an early age to pursue a musical career?
Well, Irene, as you've probably heard from many musicians and read, that it's something that you don't pick, it picks you. It's really more of a calling. This is very cliche too, as many musicians have said it, but I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, and that was about it. At that point I realized that for whatever reason it resonated, and I started taking some guitar lessons. But then I quit at age 8, so my career was over. But then I started again, I guess, at about 9. And so it's one of those things that I remember reading in one of the magazines years ago, one of the famous jazz musicians was asked if his son was going to follow in his footsteps, and all he said was well, if he has to. he doesn't really encourage it, but it's one of those things, if you have to do it, you do it. And those of us that do, we find ways to do it. And of course, it's not always easy, but nothing worth doing is easy.
Well, that's what I was going to get to next. I mean, once you've made up your mind, it's a pretty tough journey. And from what I gather, the pay is not that great. So although you were playing with some of the big names for several years, and a record deal was a long time coming. So tell us about that journey, and feel free to name drop along the way.
Well, as I told you, I played with David Clayton Thomas, who was the singer in Blood, Sweat and Tears in the 80s, and he was the only original member in the band, but he would just get a bunch of kids out of school and get on the bus and go out and play Blood, Sweat and Tears songs, and it was a lot of fun. It really was, and I enjoyed him a lot. Actually, as a band leader, I've been a sideman, and so I know how to, but I've pretty much always been a band leader since I was about 9 in my little band in the fourth grade. So I've always been a band leader, but I've been a sideman, and when you're a sideman, you have to obviously know how to deal with the leader and stuff. And a lot of people didn't get along with David, but I did, and we had a good time. And it's my New York years. When I was in New York, I was just starting out, and some of the side gigs I was getting. I also played with Peter Tork from the Monkees. He had a band that we ended up playing hard rock versions of Monkees songs, which was actually kind of fun too. So anyway, I did those side gigs, and then I did a number of, I started doing opening acts with my band. We were opening up for B.B. King a number of times, Johnny Winter back then, and Leon Russell, Edgar Winter, a lot of different bands, and then Stevie Ray Vaughan. We did a show with him in '85 with at the Capitol Theater in Passaic, New Jersey, and so we were starting to do those opening acts and stuff. But we really didn't. I really didn't get any traction till I moved to Nashville, and that was quite a bit later. I was in New York in the early '80s, and it wasn't until I moved to Nashville in '93. And we had a band called the Thunderhawks, and with Eddie Shaver on guitar and Keith Christopher on bass, and a drummer named Rick Donnelly. And we recorded some demos, actually, when I was still in Atlanta. And we got the interest of a record label in Memphis that was actually run by Sam Phillips's nephews. You know, Sam Phillips of Sun Records.
Wow, yeah.
And they... they had a they have a they still do. I'm still distributed by Selecta Hits, it's called, but they had a small blues label called Ice House Records, and Mark Maynard was the head of A&R there, and he heard the Thunderhawks record, and he really loved it. But he approached me and said that he wanted to do a Thunderhawks record, but in the meantime, he's with this blues label, and he would like to do a solo blues record for me. So I finally got a chance to do a record after being out there for about 20 years. It took a real long time, and so we recorded in Memphis, and it was I'd never been to Memphis, and it was just a magical experience having that history of blues and rock and everything. And I think it translated in that record too. There was a lot of great spirit. It was a culmination of a lifelong dream for me, and actually having to do with the Sun Records people was great too. They were, you know, as I said, they were the record label that signed me, and it was obviously not Sam Phillips. Actually, Sam was still, I don't think he was involved at all at that point, but his nephews were running Ice House Records and also Selecta Hits, which is a distributor of the largest independent distributor, I think, in the States.
And, of course, the record we're talking about, or the album, It's a Blues Thing, that received some really good responses. In fact, it resulted in not one, but two tours of Australia.
That's right. We were touring over here in, actually, we were in Key West, which is, I don't know if you've ever been over here, but Key West is at the very bottom of the United States. It's 90 miles from Cuba, actually. It's at the end of Route 1. Route 1 goes all the way from Canada, all the way down the East Coast to Key West, and that's where it ends. Route 1 ends. And so what you have in Key West is a lot of wild people, wild and crazy people. And we would do 2 weeks at a time down there, and I'll never forget it. We were in they gave us a condo. We did a two-week gig at a place called Hammerheads. I checked my answering machine up in Nashville, and I got this message that said, "This is Engelglocken from Australia, and we want you to tour over here." So I said to Keith, he was my bass player, who's been on all my records, and actually Keith, if I can take a little aside here, started the band, the Georgia Satellites. But anyway, Keith was Keith did It's a Blues Thing with me, and he's also in the Thunderhawks with me. But I said to Keith, "Who the is Engelglock?" And anyway, it was Ian McLaughlin, and I called him up, and we spoke, and the next thing we know, we're on a plane going to Australia. So we toured there in '97 and '98, and we met a young drummer who actually played with us over there named Chris Nabel, and Chris was just very enthusiastic, and the three of us hit it off great. We had two great tours over there, and then Chris actually met a girl from Argentina and moved to Argentina, and I've since toured Argentina with Chris. But anyway, when I got back to the States, that's when I did my second record, the Tony Sarno self-titled record.
I've got that Tony Sarno album right here in my hot little hand, thank you very much. So I think at this point we might play a track from that. So what would you like me to play from that, Tony?
Well, Irene, I understand that Two-Tone Cadillac was how you found me, so let's play Two-Tone Cadillac.
You got it.
Sitting close.
two-tone Cadillac there, Tony Sarno, and I'm talking to Tony Sarno right now. So tell us what happened after the Tony Sarno album, Tony?
Well, I continued to we continued to travel around the States and basically just clubs. We, as you know, in the blues scene, it's pretty much slogging it out in the clubs. But we love to play but we never had any tour support or anything like that. It's all just basically what they call it over here is the Chitlin circuit. That's what all the blues guys did for years and frat parties. Actually, Howlin' Wolf used to play a lot of frat parties, and I actually love playing frat parties. I guess you guys have fraternity parties at the colleges.
I think that's pretty much a U.S. Terminology, but we would have the equivalent, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's pretty much uncontrolled mayhem. But they're really a lot of fun. So we play the colleges and also the clubs, and then an occasional concert. But at that time, so we finished my second record and then Dee Archer's record, we finally finished the Thunderhawks record, which was we had actually started it in 92, and that's how I got to Nashville and Keith. I was actually going to move back to New York, and Keith said, why don't you try Nashville? So I said, all right. So I went up to Nashville, and Keith, Christopher, and Eddie Shaver and I wrote a batch of songs, and we started to record them at a place called Purple Dragon in Atlanta, and a guy named Stanley Gaines was the owner of that, and he had a great studio, and we cut three songs there, and it took... Let's see, that was about 93. So it took another 7 years before we actually finished the record, and we finished it in my studio in Nashville. And I ended up building a recording studio in Nashville. We had a pretty primitive, but we had a lot of great analog equipment and stuff. Nothing like the studio in Memphis. So anyway, so we finished the record in 2000. Unfortunately, 6 months later, Eddie Shaver died. He was the other guitar player in the band. And so that really kind of took the wind out of my sails for a while. So that was kind of a blow. That was the Thunderhawks was something that I had really been very excited about for a long time. And
yeah.
So that was bad.
Tony, there's got to be one hell of a great blues party going on up there in heaven, because we've lost so many good bluesmen, and goodness knows what's happening. You know what a life after death is.
Well, that's right, I feel fortunate. You know, every day we appreciate every day, but that Thunderhawks record. I mean, Eddie plays some really great guitar, and he and I together were. It was a great synergy.
Yeah.
And actually we reunited with I reunited with Keith and actually Chris Nabel, the Argentine. Well, he's not Argentinian, he's Australian. He's in Argentina now. But we got together in New York a few months ago, just three piece. We figured it's impossible to replace Eddie. That was his spirit, his vibe was just amazing. I mean, he was an amazing slide player, and so we did a three piece, and it really came out well. I have a clip of it on YouTube. If you Google Thunderhawks Sarno, you'll come up with it, because there's some kids up in Canada that are calling themselves the Thunderhawks too. So, but anyway, so we at that point we finished the Thunderhawks record, and then I was invited to. A friend of mine had invented a new product for for Bose, who makes speakers. They invited me to come up and try this new product, and I did. And they ended up actually hiring me as the resident artist. I went up to Boston and helped them develop this product. And actually, we had a seven-piece band, and we actually toured the States, and we went to Canada, Mexico, Europe, and stuff with Bose with that new product. So that went on for about 4 years. I was kind of I mean, I wasn't retired, but I mean, it was the first time in my life I'd had a real job, and it was certainly it took the weight off as far as the struggling musician, but it's also very restraining to work under, if you're a creative person, to work in those kind of environments, the corporate, which everybody listening and all of us have to do, you know, at one point or another. But it really gave me an understanding of what people do go through working for big companies and things like that. And I think as an artist, it was really important for me to see that, because anytime I play for people now, I realize that I give it 100% every night, because, you know, people are there to forget about the corporation they work for and things like that. And to me, it's a real honor to be able to play for people, and I never take that for granted.
Tony, I would love to keep talking to you, but unfortunately we have run out of time, and I did want to talk to you about the Highway Blues Project and the Big Fish Audio, but we'll have to skip that for now. I hope we get to see you in Cairns one day.
Well, Chris Nabel and I are talking about it. He's obviously tuned in over there with promoters and things like that. And the first time I toured Australia, we did 28 gigs in 31 days. It was really grueling. The flight attendant on the way home, when I was coming up the stairs, I, you know, looked like about 30 miles of bad road, and she said, "You're still here?" Because I'd been there for a month, and it was the same woman that I flew down with, the same flight attendant. She goes, "You're still here?" So anyway, so we hope to get over there and do a run. I'd love to get back there. Australia is a fantastic place, and we had such fun over there. So,
well, it's been wonderful talking to you, and thank you so much for your time. I just wish we had more time, because there's so much more we could cover, but, you know, it's you're a long way from us, aren't you, sir?
Well, we'll do it again, Irene. I'd love to do it again, and we can talk about the new project, and we're going to, hopefully next time we speak, I'll have a new album out too, because that's the last thing that came out was the Thunderhawks in 05, so we're due for something.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Irene.